Good evening. On December 16th, 2025, we're here with this bonus books panel. I'm joined, as always, by Allie, my incredible co-host, and we've also got Jeff with us this evening, and we're going to dive into Bill C-15.
Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Always. So I'm not sure how much we want to kind of tee it up because we have put the description of what this kind of is in the newsletters and such. So I'm thinking maybe we just hop right in. Jeff, if you want to share maybe your initial reaction, what first brought this to your attention?
Well, what brought this to my attention was last Saturday, so I guess not, well, I guess 2 Saturdays ago now, it was a message on LinkedIn actually. My friend Vaughn posted something on LinkedIn that said basically free postal service for accessible materials was in jeopardy. I did not see any mailing list about it, but if I'd waited a day, I would have seen something from Braille Literacy Canada. But that's how I kind of saw it, and then had him forward me the initial email with the that had the link and the excuse me the meeting for more information. It had a draft letter to be sent out to spread the word, and so my first thought was, okay, this is something that has gone undetected, unopposed, undebated, because it's just a few lines of legislation in Parliament. If I didn't know about it, chances are a lot of people don't know about it. So my first reaction was send, send, send. I started making a list of people who might be interested. You know, sometimes it at first it was, you know, some of my blind friends and teachers and, well, former teachers. And then I thought, well, there's people who just literature is important to them. By the time I was done, I had over 300 names who saw it. And I'll sort of keep my remarks brief, but I think it just kind of lit the fire. I have nothing but opposition to this bill.
I do want I do want to ask you though, why, in your opinion, like, why do you feel that this is something that they are even thinking about putting forward? Now, I've said on the air before, and actually, even a few days ago, I said it. If anybody wants to hear my further thoughts on it, we'll just put a link to that particular show in the show notes here for this show of the Ali and McCarra Show, where I did say this. But is this a case where that do you feel that the reason here is that the government is sort of indirectly saying that they don't have money to, and they don't want to continue to put it, they don't want to that they don't want to continue to do this? Like, what's what, why, in your opinion, is this, do you feel part of it?
Well, Canada Post has been in the public's eye for all the wrong reasons over the past, I don't know what, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, give or take. So my first thought was maybe perhaps this was some sort of something that was in the deal, like the little bone that they threw, but at the same time, it really doesn't make much sense. I think really, if I had to give a solid theory, I don't know. I think you sort of hit on an alley where it's, I don't buy that they don't have money. I buy that they just didn't want to put money towards it. Never mind that
And that's a
it's
better way to put
a
it. I like
relative
that
drop in
better.
the bucket. Yeah. I don't really know if they thought through the consequences or the implications of what they're sort of encroaching on here, because it might be something in a budget balance sheet that's, you know, we can save, I don't know, $1.5 million. I'm just throwing ballpark numbers out here, or just random slot machine numbers. You know, that'll be efficient. Well, that's literature. You know, we're, you know, this, I thought this was kind of funny coming out around the same time as provincially, at least here in Ontario, we've been having you know, education has been in the news because the recent test scores for EQAO standardized testing have come out, and across the province they've been saying, oh, what are we going to do? You know, and regardless of what EQAO standards mean to you, that's a different story. But here we are talking about education, literacy, math, and then we're talking about cutting a way of reading that people who are blind depend on. And this covers everything from English books, French books, multilingual, and math books. And so we're already, you know, I don't think that people in the federal government and people on the Canada Post side are really thinking through the consequences of what they're doing here. And we'll get to Canada Post in a bit, I'm sure.
Actually, you know what? Feel free to kind of expand your thoughts on Canada Post there, actually, if you want. I mean, you're right that they have been in the spotlight for the wrong reasons here, but over the last 5 years, given all the rotating strikes and all that business.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was actually 5 years. I'm just kind of being facetious.
No, you're right. I hear what you mean.
At least a year or two they've been sort of dealing with this labor issue. But what we then knew after the meeting on Monday is that what this bill does, and I'm sorry if we've covered this on the show before, but what this amendment in the bill does is it does not automatically mean that tomorrow postage rates go up and free matter for the blind is not a thing anymore.
Right.
It does not automatically mean that Sela Library, NELS, any schools, any sort of organizations, anyone sending cards, books in the mail has to pay for it. It means that it is no longer mandatory, it is no longer in the law for Canada Post to offer that in the future. They have since come out, since the story broke, because after the mailing lists went out, there was a story that did hit the Canadian press.
Yeah, that's right.
Laurie Davidson, who's the president of Sela Library, was interviewed by Canadian press, and that kind of broke the story. And following that, Canada Post did come out and say they will continue to honor their obligations to providing the free postage and reduced rates to libraries that they've been offering, and that's been in their charter since 1981, and sort of unofficially before that. Who knows what kind of gentlemen's agreements were on paper before then? But they said that they will both continue to offer this service, and that they support this bill at the same time. So they're basically saying, trust us. You know, we support the deregulation
kind of contradicting
going forward.
Themselves.
Yeah, kind of to sort of placate their audience and make them go away and stop, you know, shouting things at them and sort of keep the peace. But, you know, what happens 6 months, to year, 5 years from now is no big deal. You know, don't look at that yet. Just trust us.
Yeah.
Yeah, just be pacified. Look away.
Yeah, that's it.
What I had seen was they want the unilateral control of changing the postage prices because effectively now they have to consult the government, but they want the choice to not have to.
Yeah.
And while saying, as you just said, Jeff, while saying that you honor that obligation helps for the moment.
But it doesn't mean anything in the spotlight here.
No, and those of us who are kind of putting our voices out there and talking about this are likely going to be a lot of people who look at this and say, now hang on a minute, this, you know, it's nice to say, oh, you're honoring your commitment, but it's not going to make us go away.
It doesn't mean anything.
No,
but let me present another side to you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
The other side of it is too that the way they're looking at it, Canada Post and the government, sort of, is looking at it from a sense now that, which is not the way they should be looking at it, but they're looking at it from a sense of the small, like that, it impacts a number of people, but the population of the like, for who this could impact, or who this is going to impact, is on a less of a scale than what they're thinking. it's not on as wide of a scale as something else they could be focused on. So they're going, well, you know what? If we cut here, then it's going to be a, then, you know what? It's only going to impact a smaller population where we can sort of concentrate and put our resources somewhere else. Now, I don't agree with this whole thing, but I also don't agree with how they came out and say, and kind of to put it the way you phrased it, Jeff, just trust us. But I feel like that's kind of what they're unfortunately doing.
And if I'm missing something here, and there was a press conference that I believe was supposed to be held last Thursday with one of the ministers, and I couldn't really find the results of that afterwards, and I apologize if I'm missing something here. The government really hasn't said anything.
No, you're right. No, they haven't.
You know, there's a letter for ministers in the mail, yeah. There is a letter for individuals to ministers, to relevant appropriate ministers in the government. For example, Jill Lightbound, who's in, I believe, either transportation or procurement or something along those lines, that has been going out. But then there's also the advocacy of calling your local MP and... You know, those members of the government, you know, I called, I mean, just kind of anecdotally, I called my member of parliament here in the Newmarket Aurora riding, and surprise, surprise, they were not aware of it either, because it's just a few, it wasn't brought up in a question period on Thursday, Friday. I don't believe it was brought up when Bill C-15 was proposed. I think some of the amendments, I think the bill had come forward in November. I sent it to one of my friends who's in Ottawa, and she's like, oh, I got to take a look at the bill myself. And so, you know, that's if an MP whose background is in finance didn't know about it, it's likely that more people don't know about it. Now, one of the people who did know about it inside government and informed the big library organizations was a staffer in the Senate. So if I understand, it was a Secretary of Parliamentary Affairs for a particular senator who saw this bill or who saw this amendment and sort of alerted all the big dogs, CELA, CNIB, NELS. But most people probably still don't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I never did answer your question.
No, you're fine. You did. No. Oh, we're used to that here, aren't we? No, I'm just joking. Right, McKara?
Yeah, you keep having me back, so you must be used to that.
Oh, no. We like having you back here.
Well, of course we do.
Oh, yeah.
We do enough of it ourselves as well. We don't necessarily answer the question that's
been... Oh, yeah. No, we do. Yeah.
Maybe answer your question with a question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. yeah. But I think, though, too, one of the sides sort of, like, I mean, it's not like... But is it like, see, now, of course, CELA also, though, if we sort of, they also now stop producing CD, like stop mailing out CDs to those people who were dependent on them.
Yes, and very recently, too, as of like this past July or
something like that.
It is right on their website. If you go to their website.
It's still there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's still there.
But like, I mean, but see... I feel like there's, like, now, I certainly, like, see, I'm looking at it going, yeah, you know what, it was about time that they did that. But, here's the big difference. It's easy for me to sit here and say that. And the reason being, because I know how to use the digital side of things. Whereas the people who this is impacting, it's not like it's not easy for them to do. It's like, yeah, they can get training and whatever, but still, I've talked to a lot of people who are just having to learn the technology. It's one of those things where it just makes it rather confusing and difficult rather very, very easily or completely, right? So I feel like there's that side that, but that side certainly has gotten me to look at it that way and go, well, you know, like, yeah, this is impacting more people than we might think.
Yeah, and there, just to pick up on what you had said there, there's a few things at play there. One of them is choice.
Yes.
Because I think all of us on this call, you know, grew up, or at least, you know, developed an interest in technology. So
yes.
Anytime there was a change that came about, we either A, already knew how to use it, or B, were inclined or intrigued to know how to use it. You know, we all went from books on tape as kids to,
yes,
you know, books coming out on DAISY to, you know, the first sort of DAISY software where you still had the disc, but you could put it in your computer.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you could eventually play them on any, you know, they formatted the discs so you could play them on regular players. And then, anyone remember Victor Reader Soft?
You know? Oh, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, the library went on the web as well. They had their early web portal back in the day, and now we've kind of got the CELA library.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is kind of, there's sort of a tale of two woes that are going on here, because CELA is indirectly having a perverse effect on the thing that they're also lobbying against, and both of them are true because, yes, it's a choice thing, number one. Two, if we're talking about training, it's very easy to say to get training for it, but at the same time, I just spoke to one of my friends who, years and years ago, when she was trying to learn how to use her computer with a screen reading program after she, I think she got off work or something. You know, her CNIB technology representative came over to visit her and help her get acquainted.
Yeah.
And she had absolutely no idea. She'd never worked with a blind person before. She'd likely never worked with JAWS before. But
yeah,
this
that's
was
another
the,
thing.
The,
yeah,
the
yeah.
rehab instructor that CNIB, you know, in that sort of Barry area had sent to her. You know, and I live in an area too where CNIB largely views the blind population in my sort of riding, if you will, or my sort of in York region as a whole, as being elderly. You know, a lot of them are living in assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the independent services or even, you know, orientation mobility services just aren't offered here in the same way they might be in Waterloo and Ottawa and in other parts of the country.
I think it's the same everywhere, Jeff, to be honest.
Well, you know,
to a degree.
Yeah. Little pot sweeteners here, you know, little appetizers here, whereas other places are, you know, on crumbs. But and also, if we're talking about training, like if we can only get so much from, you know, from the local organization or from friends and family who know how to use it and can get to you, there's also, you know, if you want training, you know, if you want to go through the assistive devices program, that gets you 10 hours of training, but
yeah.
only once you've done that. And then, you know, to one of CNIB's own points, more people are going to lose their vision as they get older. And some people might, you know, by using a book player, if they don't know how to use it, if they haven't adapted to using a computer with a screen reader to get their books online, then, you know, they're not going to be able to get the same books they had through bookshelf. Now, they might learn how to do that, but if you gave them their book on disc or even just showed them how to add it, you know, if they had like a Victor Stream, for example, how to add it to their library from the bookshelf, that could be, you know, could go a long way. But it's a lot of things that go into play, and it's a lot of moving parts here. And by giving up on mailing out CDs like that, just based on a statistic, yeah, that's another, you know, that's a population within the population, you know, a minority within the minority who's already.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also I just thought of this. There's a deafblind aspect of it too.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to talk about minorities within minorities?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one.
Completely.
Yeah, that's a big one there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really interesting, but also concerning how much of it hinges on the fact that there are so many kind of prongs to this, I feel like, or so many, like...
A lot of moving parts here.
Yeah, so many moving parts that, in any case, you're just ending up with a population of people who, a lot of times, aren't getting what they need. In terms of resources, in terms of assistance.
And it's more often than not.
Yeah, and that's nothing new. Like, we're not... My saying that isn't anything...
No.
You know? And of course, like you say, Jeff, like, these smaller areas that don't have even... may not have their own branch of CNIB or don't have the same access and don't see the population as, like, concentrated there, I guess, and needing these things. It's...
Or don't have broadband.
Yeah, another big one. Yep.
You know, how many projects are out there right now? Telus is trying to get it. You know, we're trying to get Starlink going. We're still dealing with large chunks of the country, let alone within our own provinces, who are dealing with either rural internet or who, like, probably just got broadband internet, like, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, that are, you know, we're having either jurisdiction issues or tower issues or one company not wanting to give up control or getting Starlink in the midst of a trade war, you know?
That's it, right? There's a lot at stake here.
And I think that, you know, being told, you know, this is just is one more example of regular people being told indirectly by the government, hey, you're costing us money that we don't think is worth investing. Never mind that it's, you know, if we want to talk about numbers, we could take, you know, the cost of shipping Braille books out per year, and we could take the budget office, the office budgets of 20 parliamentarians and have the same results, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's it. And that's really what, like, and that's really what the big, if you look at it from the bigger picture, that's really what is kind of being, what how the government is, is looking at it from. That's really where it's kind of, you know, it's kind of where the pieces are going here with that. And I think and feel that one of the important things here is that they won't, I mean, it's kind of like whatever they can do to save money, which is fine, but don't do it for the, like, in the wrong places that where it shouldn't be done. And look at what Sela did for those CD folks, like, who are relying on that. They did what they could by putting out the training and stuff like that, but still, it doesn't diminish the impact.
No, and I think in both cases, now they're not, like, not to the same degree, but I think in both cases they might not realize just how much impact it's having. It's, you know, if we're talking about the government side, they might see it as one of 550,000 items on a spreadsheet. It looks so minuscule to them. I don't think they realize what the scope of it is. And with Sela, you know, as small, you know, as nonprofit as they are on the surface, I just don't think they really, they thought the loss that they are going to deal with here is greater than the continued effort of sending things out. And it's, I have a hard time believing that the costs for that just rose exponentially. I think they just realized, okay, we're going to go paperless here.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, they still send out, as of right now, Braille books too, right now.
They do, and that's what they've been, that's one of the big items they've been pressing in their arguments against the amendments to Bill C-15, is that if they rounded up the, you know, if they took their current volume, no pun intended, of books that they have going out now, of service, of shipments, of deliveries, and then accounted for postage for that, their, you know, their forecasts were, you know, that would cost them anywhere between $500,000 and $1 million per year. And two things. One, you know, who knows how much money they're actually taking in as a nonprofit? And two, if they, you know, operate like a business and suddenly say, you know what, the cost of expense does not outweigh the service, then what little people were getting before are, you know, that's just gone. You know, I almost look at it as like if you took someone who was thirsty and you had a glass of water that was half full, or yeah, maybe even a quarter full, you know, we yeah, can, you know, and, you know, that only gets, you know, that only makes them so, that only clenches their thirst so much. It might, you know, get their lips wet, or maybe, you know, get the dry taste out. But we can always add more. We can always work to do better. But now we're looking at dumping out that quarter of water. So they're left with nothing.
Yeah. That's...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Not to mention, and do correct me if I'm wrong, because this is just a thought that also occurred to me. For having these Braille books, do you not then need people to be transcribing them?
Yeah, and...
So then you'd be talking about job loss as well if at some point they decided that the cost for that wasn't...
And here's the thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
You make a very good point there. Sorry, I'm glad you got your thought in. I wanted to hear what you had to say there.
Yeah, no, because it was just... Yeah. I hadn't thought of that particular end of it before until just this moment. I thought, hey, you need people to transcribe these things.
Yeah.
And you'd then be talking about not only the livelihoods of people who are receiving these books and these services, but then the people who are working for CELA and NELS and all these places, CNIB.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry I almost cut you off there a second ago.
No, you're fine. Please okay, share what you were going to say.
Okay, thank you. No, thank you so much.
Of course.
See, what they're doing here is that now when a book is actually sent out, you don't send them back anymore, Braille materials anymore.
No, it used to be a big thing. It used to be with any materials that you'd receive from the library. Those Braille, print Braille cassette tapes, you'd send them back after you read them. You know, I collected the CNIB magazine Kidsworthy back in the day, and I held on to a lot of those, but from the earlier episodes, I would just send them back. The reason I didn't have them is because I sent the tapes back after I finished listening to them. And I think either one time they had sort of said informally you don't have to send them back anymore, or I just decided to go against the grain.
At that point,
they'd only been out there for another 2 years, anyways. After a few, you know, because I have, you know, if that magazine went for 7 years, I think I have the first, you know, the second 3 or 4 years on tape. But
oh,
you know, be that as it may, but
if you ever, yeah, you know what, if you ever convert them to digital, which maybe you have.
I haven't yet. I got to get my tape deck back in commission, or even just get one that's much more, you know, that's much less noisy.
Yeah.
I actually reached out to some friends who were kid editors in the earlier episodes just to see if they had their issues lying around, and not many of them do.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, and, you know, I actually spoke to some of the library staff, and they're like, they lost, you know, they got rid of the archives, unfortunately, not long after that magazine was decommissioned.
Yeah, and... You know what, too, like, see, yeah, now, and see, so a lot of, here's what I think, like, Makara, to kind of what you were saying just a second ago of the transcription, I actually don't feel, when it comes to that branch, that branch of CELA for the Braille books, I actually don't feel that they're actually producing actually new material. I feel like what's happening is that any books or anything that they have in the collection as Braille, they're just sending those out to people. And not replacing, and because you don't have to send them back anymore, not replacing
Ah, so it's a while supplies last thing.
That's what I'm feeling. That's my theory.
Well, because what I was thinking of is they have so many different versions of the book now. If you look online, you can see, like, in their library, you can get it in Word. You can get it in Daisy Audio, whether human or synthetic narrated. Mm-hmm. That's, again, another story. You can also get it in electronic Braille. And so part of me was thinking, like, if you called them and said, hey, I see this is available in electronic Braille, but, you know, which is really you download the book. It's an ebook for Braille.
Yeah.
But part of me, you know, because people still get, you know, people I know still get Braille books in the mail for pleasure. But yes. I was just thinking of in terms of the newness of the material, if you'd actually have to call them up and say, hey, I request this one in the mail, please.
Yeah. Yep.
If someone actively orders books in the mail and listens to this show, you know, send us some kind of interaction. Let us know how you get your books.
Yeah.
It would be really interesting because I do know a couple of people, or at least one, I think, who was getting them in the mail as well, yep. too.
And yes, and we'll be giving out all. And where are we at on that, Makara? Feedback at bookspanel.ca?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yes.
Send us a note there if you receive your books that way.
Absolutely, yes. or in any format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, but I mean, see, I feel like that's the biggest difference that we saw, that we grew up with these devices, and all that sort of thing, and I think that's what is sort of different. That's, I think, that the key driver in a lot of these things, where it's easy for me to sort of sit and go, well, you know what? You know, I completely understand the reason, but it's like, and the thing is, though, like, and one can't expect that someone's going to, that once they've been taught, like, the few lessons or whatever, that they're going to get it. Because there's a bit of a reality, to that as well.
Yeah, it goes to preference, it goes to, you know, think of now that they've got tablets and handhelds in restaurants and businesses now where you can scan, like, let's take restaurants, for example, you can not only scan the menu, but order things through the menu, or place your orders through either the app or the device itself.
Yes.
And send the order back to the kitchen.
Yes.
If you showed someone how to do that and they did it, you know, if you showed them how to do that at one restaurant, you know, and, you know, they filled out their drinks, their entrees, their desserts, anything they wanted, you know, there's no guarantee that they're going to prefer doing that way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
They might have done it because there's no other option. Like, if you go to an airport diner, for example, you kind of have no other option now.
Yeah.
They could be doing it reluctantly, you know, and so once they have the choice again, they're never, you know, they're not going to want to do it. Or, you know, and people in government are normal people too. How many of them are uncomfortable with the digital age, with these doohickeys that you fill out these things that you can't read the print half the time if your vision is such and such, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you take that exact line of thinking and apply that to people who receive physical media or Braille books, you know, these are not alien people that you're never going to run into. You know, these are things that everybody deals with, and I feel like, going back to the theme of the show, there's a disconnect here between what people see, and the thing is too, you know, to your point, Allie, where when I saw that email, when I saw that bulletin on their website that said as of July we have ceased delivery of CDs, my first thought was, you know, oh, well, you know, it doesn't affect me, but I know I could think of some people who would it affect. And then I kind of just sort of brushed it off. Whereas, like, you know, because it's self-interest, because I personally didn't need to worry about it. I wasn't thinking of making my voice heard about it. But at the same time, like, I can already think of someone whom I know would prefer it that way. So, you know, part of me, you know, I never would have been like, hey, how do you feel about this? Have you changed, or are you looking elsewhere for books, you know?
Well, and that's that's where that piece kind of goes, right? And I feel like what ends up happening now is, I mean, in sort of, so just to kind of put it out there to the questions to you. And Makara, I'll let you go first on this one.
Okay.
that does there have to be sort of a middle ground in terms of, one, yes, now they've gotten rid of these CDs and whatever happens to the Braille materials. Or two, what is that middle ground to be? Especially if that the training has been given to those people and they still don't quite get it. What is the middle ground? And I'll present you with one more option on this.
Okay.
Is it keep the CDs or bring them back?
Personally, I'd kind of say it is. Like, there has to be some sort of middle ground, as you said, with the training if people don't get it. Or, like Jeff was talking about, it's about choice, too. I think it's really important to offer people options because, like we were just talking about, with anyone just reading print, you know, there's people who are sighted and who may choose a printed book still over an audiobook or an ebook, and that's their matter of personal preference. And I'd think, why should the same not be extended to the blind, the visually impaired, anyone else with a print disability of some sort? And just anecdotally, I believe it was to do with the CDs. Our local CNIB discontinued their book club, and that's a trickle down to, that was an opportunity for connection for some people, you know? So I do think, personally, that options are very important.
And they seem to be diminishing, don't they?
They do, and it's really unfortunate. And because with limiting options, you're limiting access. And with limiting access, you're isolating a community that's already, I think, in a lot of ways, very isolated from aspects of community and life.
Jeff!
You know, I agree wholeheartedly. I don't really understand why. I shouldn't say that. I would love to know from the source the exact reason why they stopped with CDs. Was there any consultation? Was, you know, did they hear voices from all over and they just unanimously agreed that we're going to ignore them and just do this for our bottom line? You know, I would love to have someone from operations come on and talk about this, because I mean, I agree. It's very obvious that this was something that is missed. It's something that's necessary, and you know, I it kind of makes me laugh how we have these, you know, we have this sort of Highlander-esque thing where it's like, we don't need this because we have this now. Well, So many people never have to answer that question just because it's just assumed that their way of doing things is normal.
No, yeah, you're right there. For our show, Makara, why don't we look at trying to see if we can get Karen McKay on?
Yeah, I know we talked about that. I think in light of this conversation, I think it's even a better idea now that we sort of have some very definitive points to discuss.
Yep. Yeah, let's talk about, yeah, so this will be for the summary we will receive. Jot it down in the next steps that reach out to Karen McKay. Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, all of this are a lot of moving parts. And there has to be a middle ground. And the key theme here is choice, which I totally agree with.
Yeah, because why should a community not get choices when everyone else gets options and that is completely fine and no one's looking at the cost of, oh, it costs this much to produce a print book. We just won't do that anymore. And I mean, there is a decline in some ways and bookstores in general, and you know, there's a whole thing around marketing and what
there
have
is,
you.
Yeah.
But you don't see it going away.
See, no. I love this because two things can simultaneously be true. One is that audiobooks have gone mainstream.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, how many technologies, how many services, how many things have started out as aids for the disabled and then greatly benefit people who have full sight, full able-bodied people, fully sighted people, and they never really know about it, or if they do, they find out about it too late.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, you have the sort of mainstream spread or adoption rather of audiobooks for the better, I might add, because that means more, that means, you know, there's more demand, there's more interest, and everybody wins. On the other hand, you know, Indigo Chapters isn't closing. You know, we're not seeing what happened. You know, we're not seeing Indigo Chapters, you know, going under like HMV did.
No.
No, that
and
is true.
No, because they've adapted.
They've adapted, and they still sell a lot of hardcover materials. You know, and again, we talked earlier about choice, but how many people, if you told them, of all ages, of all walks of life, if you said, yeah, there's going to be no more print books, they'd say, oh, I don't like having, you know, a book on screen. My eyes get tired. I love to take them on vacation with me. I'd love to sit out back and have this while I have my coffee. And they just, to them, that's just a non-option. So I really think I think it's a way of thinking that once people see how relatable it is, they'll start to really see that there's less of a gap here in terms of how people do things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. These bookstores like Chapters, Indigo, they're not closing, but I mean, they've had to sort of, see, it's all about not wanting to, a lot of it is on a mainstream, like, I mean, a lot of companies continue to still, like, they continue to still operate things in the same way and thinking and hoping that it will work, when clearly you have to always define a new path and new direction.
I mean, the great thing about libraries and bookstores adapting is that we can go into a library now pick out a book and see if it's available in some form of alternate materials. You know, if it's on their, what's it? I believe it's, is it Turo? Is it, what's, I forget the library service that they use for audio materials.
Libby? Overdrive?
Libby, Overdrive, thank you. You know, that was something that was not a thing when, you know, when we were growing up, because especially in your school library, your public library, if you wanted something, you had to either get it transcribed or you had to call the library and say, hey, I would like to order this book in Braille or on cassette or something.
Yep.
Or have it read to you if you were in such a position.
Exactly, that too.
But you didn't have a lot of options that promoted a sort of independence, right?
No, you didn't. No. Well, Makara, it's that time in the show again.
It is. It's schedule time.
Yes.
What is coming up on the Ali Musa show?
Well, Becky Coles is coming back on January 19th, actually.
Oh, yes.
so, and then on February 2nd, Jim Taddy makes his return to talk. We're going to do a Leafs check-in, we're going to talk Leafs and Jays. But, actually, it just occurred to me, before that, though, before all of that...
I was going to say... Yes, do you not have anything sooner?
Yes, guy, you do.
That's his thing, yeah.
But the funny thing is, this is the second time. You did this the other day as well.
Oh, are you, wait a minute here, are you catching me on some of this?
Yeah, because you're forgetting someone.
Oh, oh, you're catching me on this!
Yeah.
Oh! Well, on Friday, September 19th... What? Oh, no.
What month is it?
December 19th! Oh, man!
Well, in Allie's defense, the days of the months do line up in September and December, so...
Oh, they do. They do. Oh, my goodness.
On Friday, December 19th, the play-by-play voice of the Jays, on the audio side, Ben Shulman... is going to come up, is going to be here, making his way to the airwaves to talk about the Jays season that was. And a little bit of recap into the upcoming, what's happened so far in the offseason.
I was going to say, you think we can get some insider reports on the latest agent talk? Somehow I doubt it, but it'd be really... But I'm excited for it.
Yeah, that will be live at 3:30 p.m. I believe it's 3:30 p.m. Eastern.
That sounds about right. I think that's what you were saying the other day.
And you can listen on audio, you can listen on YouTube, and of course, if you miss it live, you will also be able to hear it on your favorite podcasting platform as well. So there'll be all kinds of ways that we can hear this, that you'll be able to hear what is coming up across the network, which is the
The Musa Slobodian Network.
Yes. And what's coming up, and I think we've got what's come, and we've, and you and I will be back in the studio as well. What have we got coming up over these next little bit? I know we've, understand we got some bonus content.
Yeah, of course. First of all, we'll be back on Sunday, December 21st for our usual regularly scheduled programming at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, where we'll be discussing the most wonderful tales of the year. That is an Audible exclusive that was written and performed by several beloved Audible narrators. That'll be a fun, festive little discussion. And this just in, as of today, we have a bonus show coming up on Monday, December the 29th, where we will be joined by Steve... Was it Barkley?
Yes.
Steve Barkley. We'll have a chat all about books and technology and Braille displays. And that, I think, was at about... What was it? 2:30?
I think it's 3:30.
3:30. Yes.
And well, 2:30 Winnipeg time, so yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, we'll have more newsletters going up about that closer to your usual reminders so that you can tune in live. Be sure to subscribe to the newsletters because that is where everything goes first. We always encourage that. And... Oh, sorry, Jeff, did you have
something? Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
You did miss Boxing Day.
Yes, yes, thank you.
We're getting to that, we're getting to that.
We're getting to that, but...
Okay. Just making sure, you know.
I know! And we've got a books panel coming up, don't we, Makara?
Yeah, and I don't blame you, Jeff, given how this has gone.
Are you saying it's my fault?
No, but there's a bit of self-interest in here, too, you know.
No, I know.
Absolutely fair.
Yeah. Oh!
Yes, thank you for that, I know. Okay. We will be back with another books panel, with our regularly scheduled books panel content on Boxing Day, December 26th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be discussing Canada by Mike Myers. That'll be a fun one, I think. Last one of the year, too. Can you believe it?
Oh, it's hard to believe. We got lots of content coming up in the new year, too.
Yeah. Of course. We'll get the list up there. I've got a whole bunch of them. I'm just going to refine them and put them into order.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, and then, of course... lots of content here to take us through, and this is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We have so much more coming up, and of course, follow us on all of the socials to keep up to date with that, especially the newsletters, all of the sites, the network hub site, anywhere you can find those updates, do follow it. And we'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, all of the above. As we head into the festive season in full force.
Yes, and where can they find us? We're on we're on WhatsApp, and I think we're on Discord as well. We're everywhere.
We are. WhatsApp, Discord. We've done away with Messenger. We're on Facebook. We're on Blue Sky. We're on Goodreads. There's a group there and our individual profiles. There's all the podcast platforms you could possibly want. Wherever the Apple library is supported, you can find us there. YouTube, of course, you might be listening there live now at the books panel. The audio stream is another live method of listening. And I think that about covers it. And of course, feedback at bookspanel.ca. Send us a note.
And thank you. And thank you so much, Makara, for being in the studio here tonight.
Of course, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Allie, for hosting alongside.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, Jeff.
As well.
No problem.